listener production.
Yes, hello and welcome to Footy Talk for your Monday. What a round six it was. Don't you just love Harley Reid? The 1990s Kurt Cobain hairstyle, the toughness in the middle, the hangers, the goals we're going to talk about here. North Melbourne, are they going forwards or backwards? We're going to get the latest with David Zaharakis. How good are the Cats? And we're going to take the mickey out of the size of his car because it is absolutely enormous. And wind the clock back, he won the Anzac Day medal in 2013. Absolutely dominated. The great David Zaharakis on Footy Talk for your Monday. Oh, hello. A big welcome to Footy Talk for your Monday. It is Jay Clark in the Essendon. Great here, David Zaharakis. Say hello to you, Zaka.
Hello, how are we?
You have come with a full 2 litre bottle of coconut water. Oh. And I just, by looking at the size of your drink, you are primed for a big show.
I was just about to put it under the desk because I knew you'd pick up on that. You got me there. Yes, I've come off some training this morning, so thanks for picking up that.
Almost as big as your car, which I saw out the front because you've got the most ridiculous oversized car. What kind of car is it? Because you're clearly a city slicker and you're driving in what it looks like to be something the size of a caravan.
Well, have we got a car sponsorship with this thing? I don't know. I drive them for Northern Motor Group out there in the northern suburbs.
Oh, and, it's a little deal.
And it's a little plug here. And yes, Nick looks after me there. But he's put me in a Nissan Navara, which I drive in the streets of Richmond. My tyres haven't been slashed yet. I know there's some intercity slashes going around there. Right. So I haven't been done yet. Hopefully not.
It is a ridiculously big car for a little midfielder you are, mate. You and me the same size. Let's get into the serious stuff. It's been a massive round six of AFL and the news headlines continue to bubble over because Toby Green and Jesse Hogan are fighting their suspensions at the match review panel. I don't want to get bogged down in this too because it's too much because the tribunal can be very boring. But the whole idea that there is a Toby tax, right? That the AFL, that Andrew Dillon sits there and goes, oh, we're going to add a week or two to Toby Green just because we don't like him, is the biggest load of bull dust, Zaka, I have ever heard in my life. And I can't believe GWS coach Adam Kingsley tipped into it on the weekend saying, oh, just because it's Toby, you know, that he got judged harshly. Do you really reckon Andrew Dillon could give a stuff who it is? Like, it's complete crap, mate. And I'm sick of it.
Yep. I think he's got a few other issues to focus on.
A few bigger fish to fry.
Roof in Tassie or something like that. but I think, it's very interesting. I know I said on the way in here with you that Charlie Cameron last week gets off on the good bloke tax.
Yep.
And everyone brought up Toby Green, potentially, well, he can't use the good bloke tax, whatever. He's had been done so many times. Then all of a sudden, a week later, bang, he's in the headlines for an incident, getting reported and getting a week. So for me, it was quite funny that happened immediately after.
Do you feel a little bit sorry for him in terms of the marking contest? Like he's a bloke going for the ball. It's instinctive, isn't it? Like sometimes if you pretended to throw your keys at me, I would probably turn and flinch. Yep. Like when my five-year-old fly kicks me in the head on the lounge room floor, you just turn instinctively. And that's what Toby did. I mean, in that moment, do you have some sympathy for these guys?
I do. It's the same for me. I look at it very similar to the Peter Wright incidents where you want players to – so Cunningham from Sydney, you want players to come back with courage in the game and go with the flight of the ball. But then there's also a duty care. Well, there's duty care from both players, one going back with a flight and then one coming now forward to a contest. And when I immediately saw it, and no one else might have this take, but when I immediately saw it, I thought Toby's a victim of how athletic he is here.
Of course he is.
He's a victim of how athletic. So Toby launches at the foot in. He can jump higher than most small players out there.
He can.
And if both him and the Carlton player jump at the same height, they bump shoulders, whereas Toby's very athletic and his shoulder obviously hits Carlton player's head. So that was my immediate thought. Then after that, it went to, well, clearly he's hitting him in the head.
Yep.
And with the AFL these days, with everything that's going on, he's in trouble, which is what happened. But I just feel we don't want to stop the forwards from charging up at the footy. I still think that's a great look in the game. You want them attacking the contest and you don't want players like Toby to then pull out of contest.
Yep. No.
in the game. So, yeah, it's a very grey area. We know footy's like that, split-second decisions, but I don't know. Immediately thought was he was a victim of his own athleticism.
Have you ever gone back with the flight or gone sat back in the hole and never. Been like, no, you have.
No.
But have you ever, what's that like when you go back? I feel like that's a scary place for a footballer, and there must be a few things said by the big key forward 30 metres behind you. Zaharakis, if you stay there, mate, I'm going to put you into row L. Does that happen? Does that sort of stuff go on?
Yeah, for me, it was when you were going back. If you were going with a flight, you probably knew something was coming, right? You could have a look and also look at the footy at the same time and know. For me, I found when you kind of came into a contest where the ball was sat on your head and you were just a duck, where you were facing the play. So
it's
you
a
knew
dark
the,
place.
And you don't know what's coming behind you. It's a dark place where you don't know whether you're going to get a knee in the back, your glute, your head, mark of the year taken on you. That was the scariest moment where you kind of got to put your hand up. Mm. And in that moment, you're going, well, I need to put my hand up so the crowd knows I'm going for the footy, but I'm going... I'm absolutely gone here. You don't want to be obviously shirting that contest, but that's the hardest one for me, I found, when you were just a sitting duck not knowing what's behind you.
So what about the Joshua Shelley incident? That was a major one on the Friday night. Did you see that where he was in
he
the...
did it a couple of times on the week on Friday night.
Now, I have some sympathy for a young player. I sort of go into a bat for him a little bit because it can be a learning experience.
Yep.
Like, I would imagine majority footballers have that sort of a moment. And in this concussion world, like, and we talked about the brain injuries, like it can be a scary place. But have you been in that situation or have you seen that sort of situation? And how does that go down in the locker room?
Yeah, it is a scary place, the AFL field, because players nowadays, I think, would potentially think about concussion or I could get absolutely whacked here and into next week. Every player in their career has probably had one or two incidents, whether it's in their whole career or one or two incidents a season.
Yep.
And it might get spoken about, but as long as it doesn't become a pattern of behavior, it's an event in a year where you might, as I said, have one or two. He kind of had three or four, I reckon, in the space of maybe 10 minutes on Friday night, if I'm remembering correctly, when I was watching the game. And that's when you don't want it to become a pattern where you see, and I think he's a brilliant player, he's exciting, but you just don't want it to become a pattern where he's pulling out because that will cost him in big games.
Yep.
There was one of the incidents on the weekend where the ball went straight through his fingers.
It did
cost him the game. If he had taken that mark in the pocket where the ball went straight through his fingers where
they win
the game, he kicks a goal from there. So if it starts costing your team, which it did on Friday night for them, and it becomes a pattern behaviour, you kind of need to try and stamp it out from them. He is young. You know he wants to put on a show, but sometimes players that want to put on such a show can almost have that then still in the back of their head that they want to pull out a contest every now and then.
Did you ever have a moment like that on the footy field?
Yeah, I would have had a moment like that. I'm not going to sit here and say no, definitely would have.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if I say no, someone's probably going to pull up some vision out of me. So I'm not going to sit here and say I'd never pulled out of a contest. Or at least, like I said to you, when you were sitting duck, you're going, well, I don't really want to do this right now, but I have to.
Yep.
Actually it's kind of attempt to mark a footy, even though you're going to have no chance. I'm not even really looking at the footy at this stage, but you're going to get absolutely smashed. So there would have been times where you put one hand in or whatever because you just know a 110-kilo ruckman's coming your way. That's how I did my my collarbone against Richmond in 2018. A ball was coming in and I knew I was going to get smashed.
Mm.
It was a handball or the ball got flicked up in the air and I grabbed it and Toby Nankervis was coming the other way. And I thought, well, if I tap this, I'm going to look soft.
Yep.
And I immediately took the ball and Toby Nankervis came. Reece Conker jumped on his back.
Mm.
So I had 300 kilos of force basically and then my collarbone popped out of its socket and I missed 6 weeks. But I knew in that moment if I didn't take it, it would have looked soft.
Toby Nankervis occasionally trains at the gym that I'm at in Essendon and I could not jump out of that man's way quick enough. He is a big man and a big scary man.
And he hunts you on the field too.
Oh, does he? What, are we going to get to North Melbourne and Harley Reid in 1 second? You, massive week in the football calendar, Anzac Day. I know one of your favourite days on Thursday. You are an Anzac Day medalist, David Zaharakis. In 2013, you had an absolute day out. 34 possessions, 6 clearances, 14 contested possessions. You must have felt pretty bloody good dominating Collingwood to the best, 46 points you won by. What are your memories of that game?
You missed 4 goals in there too,
I think.
What'd
you get 4? No, I knew that. I was just waiting to see.
34 and 4, nah. 14 contestants, not bad. That's That's a very high above career average there, I reckon.
Just a one tackle.
Just didn't need a tackle that day. Had the footy so many times.
Is that the favourite moment of your career?
It's definitely up there because everyone obviously remembers the goal, 09, but I had about 10 possessions that day and had no real impact till later in the day. But that was an all-round one of the best games I've played in my career. And we were coming off three losses on Anzac Day to them. So we stood up. Yeah, Job had an absolute blinder too. It was just that season in 2013, we had obviously everything going on. We had some amazing wins. Yep. Perth twice over there, against West Coast and Freo, down by 5 goals both games.
That was the day Job cried.
That was there. Exactly. That was that day. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then Anzac Day, an amazing win there too. So it was just a time in the footy club where everything was going obviously in the shitter, but our performance on the field was still pretty good. And that day out was it was a good one. I kicked a goal in every quarter too. That helps.
Spread your genius across the match. Yes. We'll have to get to that was it Fremantle or West Coast? It was a West Coast game where Job was booed. Yep. It was an extraordinary 3 hours of football. In fact, it's probably 5 hours before and after as well. We'll get to that another time.
Yes.
Hey, what did you make of North Melbourne versus Hawthorn? Because it was a big test for both clubs. A winnable game for both because they're not too far off each other in terms of their evolution. I have got some worries about the North Melbourne Football Club, I must admit. And they got Alistair Clarkson his first season last year. Everyone was cock-a-hoop. Well, I wonder whether they're actually going backwards this year. I mean, they should have been a lot better. They're between their forward and their back end, they don't have the tools other than Nick Larkey. And their midfield, for as much as we yabber on about all the high draft picks, they're going no good in there. What's your take on North Melbourne? How deep is this hole that they're in, Zacha?
Well, that's the thing. Like, you say that they're on the same trajectory or path as Hawthorn, and some would definitely argue that.
Roughly.
But when you're 50-point worse side than the second bottom side in the comp, it's not a good look for your fans. Where's the hope that they're getting from the performances? And if you're watching North Melbourne this year as a fan, you're trying to look at positives of the future.
It's something.
Something. And they're not getting that at all at the moment. My big question is that where are the leaders? They're not performing.
Yep.
Do North Melbourne have to bring in Liam Shields just for a bit of, a bit of leadership out in the field, a bit of grunt, solidarity.
Experience.
Just to bring something in the side. Because Davies Uniac and Simkin have been the leaders of the footy club. They've got to start performing. Obviously, Nick Larkey is a forward down there, and he can't really help if the ball's not coming down. He's trying his best down there. Their backline struggles a lot. Luke McDonald's not having a great year compared to what he's done in the past. So I'm worrying where the future is for them, how much of a struggle over the next 2, 3, 4 years for North supporters is going to be out there, because there are other sides in the competition that are struggling, but all of a sudden West Coast now look like they've beaten Richmond, who beat Sydney, and then they've beaten Freo, who were 3-0, and their results this year have been close losses. And they absolutely blew Freo out of the water. So if you compare it to other sides around their same development, 4 weeks ago we were saying West Coast was as bad as a waffle side.
Priority pick,
everything. And now they look like they can actually probably win quite a few games this year. I mean, I'm worried as an Essendon fan, in 2 weeks' time we go to Perth. I'm worried we're going to get blown out of the park over there. So
Elliot Yochin, Kelly and Harley Reid in the midfield. Like, I'm not going to say it's an A-grade midfield, but it's not far off, right?
Well, they're going back to their best footy. Elliot Yo's playing like 2018 Elliot Yo. And as I said, Tim Kelly, and then you've got Reid in there. It's immediately in 2 weeks. That's how quickly you can turn around in AFL.
Yep.
So North fans could be thinking that, well, hang on, what if we have one good week and then we turn into two? But you're not seeing that. Whereas the top line talent at West Coast is still premiership players. Mm. Whereas North don't have any of that.
No.
They don't have the boast of premiership players out there and the leaders that are standing up. So that's where I really worry about them. And then all of a sudden I'm really buoyant on West Coast's future, which is quite scary.
And you know, the worry with North Melbourne is like other clubs, because of the lack of success, other clubs are going to come for like Luke Davies, Uniac. They're going to come for Cameron Zerha.
Yep.
You're not going to waste your whole career at a club which doesn't have a finals win, Zach. I don't want that to sound too close to home.
Yeah, it smashes me in that regard, doesn't it?
But, you know, like every club in the competition is going to have a look at Luke Davies-Uniacke when he becomes a free agent, because Luke Davies, like Benny Mackay, you know, he'd won 8 games or whatever it was, or 12 games in 8 years of football, if you know what I mean. Like, that team success, that carrot is a big one.
So I can relate to that. So for me, end of 2017, I was out of contract with Essendon.
Who came?
The club we were just talking about.
West Coast.
Yep.
And
so I had a...
Cottesloe is a very nice place.
Well, Luke Shuey, my best mate growing up.
Oh, really?
So I had a offer on the table from them. But talking about the North Melbourne scenario, at the end of 2017, we had Joe Danaher kick 50-plus goals, Ratso Fantasia kick 50. We made the finals against Sydney. We didn't win, but... Yep. I could see out of the drug saga that we were potentially looking at a great list. A trajectory where we were getting the recruits in. So Smith, Sard, Stringer, all that. And it made me want to stay because I thought I could see a future of success.
The door I got you.
Yeah, exactly. They got me. So, but then obviously West Coast win the flag the next year. So it was a great decision. Could have been very successful. No, I'm very happy I stayed at Essendon. But
very loyal.
But in saying that, you could see as a club that we were potentially going somewhere. So that's why I wanted to stay. I wanted to be around the next successful future of Essendon Footy Club and potentially try and win finals. If you're one of those players right now who's out of contract or around that mark, that why are you staying? Mm-hmm. Why, we can't actually see right now where the club is going in terms of how successful we could be. So that's the real struggle to them. And then all of a sudden they go backwards. They do. If you start losing players around that 25, 26, 27 mark and
that's
have a big
like
gap, I agree with that. Zerha still hasn't signed, has he? No. And then, so it's very nervous times for North supporters, because I know you're big on it and you've spoken about in the media and other journos have spoken about it, that you can't just rely on the draft anymore to rebuild your list. You can't just go back. Otherwise, it's a 10-year rebuild. So there's no 3-4-year rebuilds. You got to go to trade or free agency. Who's going to want to go to North Melbourne right now? There's no one. They're not a destination club. They're not big supporter base.
They haven't been able to get anyone for 8 years.
Exactly. So even if they have a treasure chest of money, you're not going to be able to recruit players because they're not going to be able to see success. I think players this younger generation are more about success than money, potentially. Mm-hmm. I think a majority of people are. But then you're looking at North, you're still not going to look at them as potential success to be able to go there. So the money's not going to draw it. The big club's not going to draw it. Yeah. But then also success isn't.
And the spell of Clarko, that novelty will wear off if they don't have some wins, as you say. Can I just touch on quickly, 2016, which you played in, what was it? It's just about 2018 losses in a row for the Bombers. How on earth did you keep your sanity? How on earth on the inside of the football team when you were getting routinely belted by 60, 80, 37, 78, 108, 79, 38, 46 points, 81 points, 69 points, 61 points in round 3? How did you keep your sanity through all that?
Beating Melbourne in round 2 helped that very early. And then I think we had 3 wins that year. Beating Carlton 2 was nice.
When you're in that position.
Yeah. I get asked this question a lot, and there's twofold answers to this. Mm-hmm. So one is, wasted a prime year of my career. I was 26 years old, in your prime of your career, all the whole, that whole stuff, wasted your prime, right? So on the outside, looking back now, you go, you're quite angry and dirty about it because it's a wasted couple of years.
Are you still angry?
No, I'm not now. No, I can talk about it now happily, but... Yeah.
Back then, however.
But that's the thing. So you look at it two sides. You go, that, wasted your career, can't believe that. I'm not playing for premierships. I'm not playing for all that stuff. But then when we were in it, in that moment, we knew we weren't going to win games, and it was kind of a free year of let's just go to training every day, have fun with your mates, try, obviously you're going out on the weekend and trying to win and stuff. We won 3 games, but you're not, there's no expectation there really from the coaches, from the fans or anything. And people just go into the game wanting to see effort, wanting to see players do well.
Which is North's situation at the moment.
Exactly, yeah. And we had all the top up players and all that. So we just tried to have as much fun as we could in the moment to enjoy it. Otherwise you are going home depressed. You got anxiety, you got pressure on you. Mm. We just went, well, we're not really going to compete for the flag, not going to compete for the top 8. Let's just have fun and make the most of it. So we did. So even though we're losing by 80 points, you're not going in going, we could win this game.
No.
So the expectation completely different. So then you kind of enjoy the year in a little bit of a weird way where you could just play footy with your mates.
Yeah.
But then, as I said to you, the other fold of it was just so angry because you're not competing for flags and finals and that kind of thing. So
a mix of emotions.
It was a mix of emotions, but we just tried to make the best of it day to day. But North in a completely different scenario. We had top up players knowing that we were getting the cavalry arriving the year after, which in 2017 we made the finals.
Yeah.
North players can't see that. No. I don't think right now that they haven't got 10 other players who Brownlow medalists and other players coming in to play next year.
Job hip.
Exactly, yep.
What about Harley Reid? Have you seen, so he's played 6 games. I spoke to a list manager on Sunday. I said, what do you reckon he's worth? He said, honestly, to get him back to Victoria, clubs will pay him, including the increases of the salary cap from 2027 onwards, which is the next CBA. They said you could genuinely see a club offering him $20 million over 10 years. Like, and that is a genuine possibility. Like, this kid is sitting over in Perth. Looks like he's having the absolute time of his life, doesn't he?
If he does.
And has made an incredible impact. Like, Joel Selwood was maybe a little bit of that. But and maybe the West Coast players too are feeding off him because they know they've got this special kid. Mm-hmm. You know, that would generate a lot of hope and positivity for them, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, and in the competition, West Coast is a massive club.
Yeah.
They're the richest club, I think, in the AFL. They've got supporter base, wait list, everything. They've got so much money. So
just couldn't get you over the line.
Couldn't get me over the line, no. So they've got everything going for them over there in terms of they're a massive club, right? But yes, they are on the West Coast of Australia and Harley Reid's from Victoria. And I think the thing that works in their favour is that he's a country kid, loves that small town. I mean, it's not small town, but loves that quieter lifestyle, beach lifestyle maybe potentially for him over there, or just a smaller town where he can just enjoy life with your mates around you, your footy mates and that, where Victoria, he's not from Melbourne, so the big city's not calling him to come potentially to the big city where he's grown up with hundreds of mates around Melbourne and wanting to be around there. So I that's the thing. That's what I think works in West Coast favour. Every time I hear him speak in the
media, looks like he loves
it. Looks like he absolutely loves West Coast, and the boys get around him. And I know, as I said before, Luke Shuey is the midfield coach there. Absolutely love him.
He'd be happy as.
Happy as there. And there are evidence of Victorian players going over there and staying there.
Shoe.
Andrew Gaff stay there for the whole career, and they just get entwined in that lifestyle over there. Mm. They meet a lovely Perth girl, and they want to stay over there. So for me, I think he's got a few things working in his favour, but if you do have a $20 million offer for 10 years on the table,
hard to knock back. West Coast is going to be good too. They've got plenty of salary cap room, so you think they would be all right. You reckon Essendon, how much the Essendon's form?
Yep.
That was a great win against the Crows. On the road, magnificent under Brad Scott. Do you think they're a chance against the reigning Premier, the MCG, on Thursday? Because Anzac Day, I feel like both clubs, you know, can tend to be tight. They're both a chance. Do you give them a chance of rolling the Magpies?
Well, yeah, they've played well against them on Anzac Day in the last couple of years, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, we were up, I think, was it 22? We're up by about 6-7 goals and got rolled by them. So I think we do play well against them. Or Anzac Day, obviously, anyone can play well. But looking at Collingwood now, though, from the 20-minute mark, or whatever it was, or 10-minute mark of that quarter, the second quarter of the weekend, to then the rest of the game, they absolutely turned it. It's almost like a giant woke back up. Yep. Yes, they did win 2 previous games, but the way they played from that second quarter onwards on the weekend was unbelievable to watch.
What did you see?
Just their running style football, running waves again, just dominating pressure around the contest, sharing goals. You know, when the forward line starts sharing goals again, they're back as a team rather than individuals trying to do their own thing to think they're helping the team win.
Which lifts everyone.
Bobby Hill on the weekend was amazing.
Him giving off
it was unbelievable to watch. So that for me got me excited about Collingwood again. But then Essendon, I'm very excited. Right, we're 4-2. No one thought we would be 4-2 at this stage of the year.
I thought you'd be 1-6.
Exactly. So I'm very excited of the results. But my concern is they lost to Sydney and Port and got smashed by Port, and Sydney beat us by 5 goals. When we come up against sides who will potentially finish in that top 6 or 7, we don't perform well.
Yep.
So we've beaten Hawthorn, Adelaide, St Kilda, and who are all bottom 8, and the Doggies who are 8th. Right now, Collingwood, yes, they're outside the 8, but they're premiers from last year. So this is the challenge this week, that we have to stand up against a top 6 side.
Bigger test.
Bigger test, because we don't perform well. We beat sides below us that we should beat, and we aren't performing well against top sides who are going to be there in finals or thereabouts. So this week for me, even if they lose, But if they lose by putting in a great performance and it's a close game, fine. Mm-hmm. But if we lose by 8 or 9 goals, then it's just back to, oh, we can't perform against top 6 or 7 sides. So looking forward to that.
You'll be at the MCG on Thursday. If you see David Zaharakis, go up, get a photo, ask him for a selfie, an autograph. He loves all that sort of stuff, the Anzac Day medalist. I know you're in your best form on Anzac Day. What about this game, Carlton versus Geelong? The Cats did a job over Brisbane. They are 0-6. It has been an extraordinary start for Chris Scott's
six
men.
6-0.
Well, 0-6. 6-0. God, they are top of the table after missing the finals last year. It has been unbelievable. Yes, Tommy Stewart's got concussion and he will be out, and the fixture does get a little bit harder from here. But as Lee Montagna said in pre-season, you can't write off the Cats because their system stands up, they play well at home, and Chris Scott is the best coach in the AFL. Do we sleep on the Cats, Zacha? Because no one's surprised at all that they're going as well as they are now, except for possibly the growth in the midfield, because that was the knock on them, wasn't it? We thought, do they, you know, we know what they've got down back. Jeremy Cameron, one of the best players in the competition up forward. It's like, can they grow a leg in the midfield? Max Holmes bobs up. Tanner Bruin looks like a nice link-up player. They're still waiting for Cam Guthrie to come back. Paddy Dangerfield's had some time out. I could easily see them playing off in the grand final, because if they finish top two, you know, they're gonna be playing at the MCG, you know, they're gonna be staying in Victoria, they'll get the rails run. What it does is it really backs up their whole list management strategy around the sort of the little top ups. You know, this is a club that for 20 years hasn't ever felt the need to go down and do the full rebuild like Luke Beveridge said. So it's just an extraordinary act once again. And they're already managing players like Tom Hawkins to give them a bit of a rest.
They're an extraordinary club. They're the envy of the AFL, I believe, especially as a player. You look at their club and why players want to go there, how they keep performing every year. I still think, even though you mentioned then Chris Scott, one of the best coaches in the AFL, I still think he's underrated even then, because at the start of the year, with the list they've got now, which they're currently 6-0, no one gave him a chance to be anywhere near the top eight, or at least they thought maybe thereabouts. He has got that list performing to the absolute maximum capability that they're able to. I mean, being 6-0 in that regard. So I still think he's an underrated coach, even though he's looked at one of the best coaches. We spoke about it a couple weeks ago. The knock was their midfield, because they were so good as a forward line and back line, and those players are standing up. For me, when you look at it, they are, like you said, 6-0. They're going to potentially be a top two team. Are they
peaking too early?
Are they peaking too early in that regard? I know they're going to rest players throughout the year, which is what the history they do, because they've obviously got an older list. But you don't want to be playing one your best footy at this time of year, because Collingwood, I don't know, they did it last year, play their best footy throughout the whole year. But Port Adelaide have peaked plenty of years early. You don't want to be doing it. You want to be consistently performing throughout the whole year, and then that last 6-7 weeks you really launch into the thing. So that's the only question mark on them. But when I watched them, I was looking at this morning, they have only won the disposal count in 2 out of their 6 games. They are an efficient team going in 50. So when they turn the ball over, whether it's in the back half, mid half or front half, they just go direct to goal. If you looked on the weekend, they adjusted to the conditions way better than Brisbane. Brisbane had the top 10 possession getters on the field or whatever it was. Geelong just more efficient. Okay, these are the conditions. We're going to kick the ball more than handball. Brisbane over handballed it, and we're just going to go straight direct to goal. And they do that in most games.
We're the footy.
We're the footy, but they're a low possession team who are just efficient. They know how they score, get it into the forward line, and that's how we're going to score, by being the most efficient side in the competition.
The next month, we're going to learn a lot about them. They take on Carlton. We're going to be missing a few. So, obviously, with McGovern and Saad already down, that takes a chunk out of their half back line. Sam Walsh just back in extraordinary form. So, the Cats got the Blues, which will be magnificent Saturday night. Then Melbourne, then Port Adelaide down in Geelong. And then Gold Coast away, in fact, in Darwin. So it's going to be a testing run for the Cats. It'll be very interesting. Hey, is Luke Beveridge suddenly a genius now because players like Bailey Dale come out after being subbed, etc., comes out and has an extraordinary game on the weekend, bloody 40 possessions or whatever it was. Are you glass half full on that? As Bailey Dale, I mean, as Luke Beveridge.
I wanted to ask you this question.
All right,
so
give it to me.
Is Does this justify and validate Bevo's moves early in the year that now he's getting the best out of players? So he's put everyone on notice.
Yeah.
Baylor Dale plays his best game. Aaron Norton kicks six. They're playing their best footy. Or does it indicate that his decisions early in the year were wrong because now they've dropped three games early that they easily could have won if those players were playing?
Chicken or the egg. I'm going to go with that in Bailey Dale's case, it was a bloody genius move because he needed a little electric prog. Now, I would be playing Caleb Daniel every week. Yep. I go, no, I think he's a separate case. He should be in the team. Yep. They mucked him around with his position. And if Melbourne could get their hands on him or Port Adelaide, like he could yet be traded at the end of the year.
Yep.
However, I think in Bailey Dale's case, whose kicking has been a little bit off, I think he's forgotten where his opponent is at times, which can happen, David,
which can happen
to the best of us. I think in that case, and I just saw in Bailey Dale just a bit of an edge to his game, which is
you could tell he looked angry on Thursday night.
Because he can be a bit of a cruiser.
Yes. But you could tell he was switched on. He was angry. When he kicked that goal, he looked angry.
Did.
Yeah.
Gave it the double fist or whatever.
Yes.
Give a scream out to the crowd. So I'm going with Bevo's a genius.
Bevo's a genius. All right. Let's go with that. He's getting the best out of his players because of the decisions he's made. But even Aaron Norton on the weekend, he looked like a player that was playing on edge.
Yes.
And whether that is now a thing for the Doggies, that their players are on edge.
Yeah.
We can get dropped any week.
Yep.
So we've got to get our best footy. But for them, if they put another good performance in this week, then I'll call him genius with you.
We need to finish this up, Zacha, but we're you know how clubs every second week say, oh, we don't read the media and we don't listen to what they say and it's all noise and all that. We don't know what's going on out there. They say we don't listen to the Footy Talk podcast. Is that the biggest load of crap of all time? Because when the Bunsen burner gets turned up a little bit, then teams like this respond and produce these sorts of efforts, if you know what I mean. Like, clearly the football club was under pressure and they did absorb all of it because you could see it and you could hear it in the interviews a little bit. When players and clubs say, we don't listen to the noise, how much horseshit are they actually talking, Zacha?
Well, I mean, it could be the chicken and egg, like you said, because we know we're under pressure if we're losing games, but then media smash us anyway for that. So then who's turning it around? Us internally or the media?
Yep.
You're taking credit as a journal, hey? For that. Whereas you're just jumping on the bandwagon, no, we're struggling, and you're smashing us anyway. No, I'm only fine. You do hear it. Whether you pick up a newspaper, open your phone, turn on the radio, turn on the TV.
It comes through.
Or your mates calling you up going, oh, how's Jay-Z saying shit about you?
Any danger or wind, Zacha.
Yeah, exactly. So you do hear about it regardless, whether you watch shows or whatever. So you know you're under the Bunsen burner, but you know it internally anyway. So it's just more added pressure. And everyone always says, oh, it's all just about the internal four walls and we don't worry about what anyone else says. But you're human. You get emotional about it. You know someone's talking about you in a negative light or wanting to see more out of you. So it does get to you, but some players might get to them 5%. Some players might get to them 100%.
Did anyone in the media ever say anything to you that got under your skin? Like, Caroline Wilson used to call me Sam for about the first 4 years. Like, I just didn't know who I was, which was a little bit of a hit to the ego, but I just started out, right? But I've always sort of, and I love Caro, and I talk to her whenever I see her, very respectful, but she did call me Sam for the first 4 years. I've just never forgotten it, and I may have never got over it. Did anyone ever say anything about you or something you did on the ground that stayed with you or genuinely annoyed you?
No, I don't know how long we've got, but it was in 2017. I was struggling a bit to start the year, and I went to Woosher and wanted to play a bit more midfield time. I was stuck out in the wing.
Get me in the midfield.
Wanted to play a bit more midfield time, and it honestly took me to about round 8 or 9, where there was one game, I think it was against Geelong round 9 in 2017, where I came out, had 31, 32, and I turned the season around from then.
Yeah.
And I really felt like I was back. I was playing more midfield time and had impacted the game and we won.
Yeah.
The next
you
day.
You went to Woosher and said, see, I told you.
Yeah. But the next day, I was gardening out the front with Dad.
Yeah.
And on the radio, Ron Connolly, who I think is an Essendon man.
He is.
So he was on the radio. And they were doing their good, bad, and whatever from the night before.
You're just snipping your petunias.
I was sipping that with Dad out the front. And I'm just listening to the radio because Dad loves listening to it. And Ron Connolly's bad was me because he said it's taken him 8 weeks of the year to finally play some good footy.
To pull your finger
and
out.
And I'm just gardening the roses and hearing him go, I'm up and about going, yeah, I had 30 last night, feel good finally. And then he's given the bad because I hadn't performed for the first 8 weeks, but I finally pulled my finger out.
You're stuck on starvation corner on a forward flank for the start of the season.
Exactly. So that stuck with me. That was just quite funny. I remember that story now that you mentioned it. So nothing else that a journo said, but that just stuck with me.
Did your old man ring up SEN and give him a serve?
Yeah, he should have. I was having a good morning and until then I was the bad. So yeah.
Oh, very good. It's all fun. It's just a leather ball in it. We have a lot of fun. It is a massive week. If you're lucky enough to have a ticket to the MCG on Thursday, have a great day. It is the best day of the regular season. And David Zaharakis, you absolutely dominate on it. You'll be there. You'll be cheering for the Bombers. What's your tip?
Essendon by 15 points.
Who's your Anzac Day medalist?
Oh, that's Zach Merritt. Can't go past him at the moment. He is in unbelievable form.
He's best form of his career.
I think has he won 3 or 4 BNFs? I'm not sure, but he's going to win another one.
A whole draw full of them. If a Smokey for a Brownlow medal, it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me, but Essendon would have to continue to win games. Righto, Zacha, thanks for a great show today, mate. Thank you very much for listening to Footy Talk for your Monday. This is Kilda Marf. You'll be back tomorrow, of course. Joey Montagna and Nick Riewoldt will be hard-hitting and as humorous as always. If you're listening on Spotify, hit the bell to be notified when we drop a new episode. And if you feel like Zacha should downsize his car, give him some feedback on Instagram as well. This has been Footy Talk. We'll catch you next week. Listener.